Morning, everyone. Has anybody seen the animated film Inside Out? Inside Out? I'm not talking about In or Out. That's a different topic, and I'm not going to go there, right? Inside Out. It's about what goes on inside the head of a girl, of a child. And the film is based on five characters inside her brain, who are the five emotions that control the girl. There's joy, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust. It's really good because there's a great deal of truth in the film, and the way that we react to things and the way that we see things. Basically, the film is about these five characters and interacting and controlling the girl. So you've got Joy, the happy-go-lucky sort of character who, every time the girl is happy, she's, well, hey, you know, this is all really good, and so she's controlling the emotion of joy. Then you've got Sadness, who's all a bit downcast and, you know, slow and, you know, whenever she's sad. Then you've got Anger, this little character who's, and whenever something goes wrong, he's, do this, do that, really sort of fiery sort of little character. And then you've got Fear, who's very timid and very, oh no, you can't do this, you can't do that, trying to pull back from the girl getting hurt. And then Disgust, there's this girl character who's, ew, you know. That's disgusting. And you can recognise sometimes when things go wrong or things go right. You can recognise, oh, that's my little anger going, arr! Or this is my, ew, disgust. And it's a lot of banter in our house after we saw that film. Because we sort of, oh no, put that anger away. Tell him to be quiet.
What age are you talking about?
What, the...
Well, age of the child.
Oh, the child. She must have been about 10 or 12. So you can see when we react to things, we can just imagine that little character inside our head getting into control and controlling our emotion. Think about it. We have many happy moments in our life, many moments that amuse us. And when you think of the stereotypical Christian, people think of Ned Flanders from The Simpsons, when everything's positive and everything's happy. We've got balloons, we were giving them away last week, saying, smile, Jesus loves you. And there's lots of verses that say, rejoice in the Lord. For example, Philippians 4:4 says, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say, rejoice. We just sang it. Rejoice, rejoice, let every tongue rejoice. Remember the AC Smile and the Young Ambassadors? And there seems to be this expectation that as Christians, we are to be happy all the time. And that can suppress what's really going on inside our heads. So today I want to have a look at emotions and have a look to see, look, it's not all happiness and light and smiles. Life isn't like that. Jordi Catch in the Speaking of Life was talking about the hurricane of life. Sometimes life is going around us at a million miles an hour and we're stuck in the middle, and sometimes we don't realise that that calmness, that presence of God is there. It's difficult sometimes to see God when all of life is pressing down. So today, what I want to do is, it's easy, very easy to do a sermon on being happy and joyful, but what tends to get ignored are the other emotions and things which people, real people, are suffering in this world today. Maybe those amongst us today, possibly, even though we probably wouldn't admit it, we all feel other emotions, not just the happy, you know, Christian stereotypical way. If you look at the news, it's filled with sadness. There's lots of bad things happening in this world today. People are dying around the world, there's terrorist attacks. People are dying of starvation and disease. There's lots of pain and suffering all over the world. And that can be really depressing. It can get us down. It's easy to get weighed down by it all. Closer to home, we hear of many people in the announcements who have stepped into eternity. People that we may have known, people we may have not have known. I think Randy Duke, one of the headquarters staff, died this week as well. Might have heard of him. How about closer to home? We've said goodbye to family and friends who are close to our hearts as a congregation. We naturally feel sad when someone dies or when we hear of bad news. And we can experience a whole range of emotions when bad things happen to us. I heard a tale the other day of someone experiencing a difficult situation. And he was told by his church pastor, have faith, things will work out. Okay? Real story. Yes, we need to have faith. And yes, God is in charge. And yes, the chances are things will work out. But to the person who is experiencing that difficulty, did that phrase help? No, it didn't. It got him incredibly upset. And he ended up talking to us on the street because he felt that he wasn't being listened to. He was being told, have faith, brother. But what he was feeling is very real, a very real emotion that he felt distressed, for want of a better word. And I'm not going into details because confidentiality, etc. It's a very British thing to put on a happy face and get on with things like robots. With the philosophy, if I can say it, philosophy that emotion is a sign of weakness. So today I ask you the question, is it okay to feel emotion? Or should we just have faith and get on with life? Let's see what the Bible has to say. The first point I want to make, though, is to address that issue of having faith and things working out. And as I said, as far as we're concerned, one of the ground rules when we're looking at this subject is the reality of it is that, yes, we can have faith in God. We can have faith that despite problems, God is with us and he is in charge. But it's easy to lose sight that when people are in the middle of their difficulty, they don't see that. It's something which, what's the phrase? You can't see the wood for the trees. There's lots of these little cliches and phrases that you can apply to say that, at the basic ground rule, yes, God is in charge, but people are going through real difficulties in the process, of in the midst of that trial. Let's have a look at 2 Corinthians 4, verses 8 to 9. And this is in the context of the passage about us being jars of clay, and they say, don't be discouraged. In the middle of that passage, it says, we are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed. So in terms of the ground rules and the fundamentals, the reality of it is that we're not destroyed. But let's not take away the fact that people have real emotions during that period. Let's have a look a couple of verses later. 2 Corinthians 4, verses 13 to 14. It is written, I believe, therefore I have spoken. Since we have the same spirit of faith, we also believe and therefore speak, because we know that the one who raised the Lord from the dead will also raise us with Jesus and present us with you to himself. So that's the reality of it is that we are in Christ. We are presented holy with God. We are resurrected with Christ. But when we're going through the mill, when we go through the mill, we are not destroyed. We have that confidence. We are raised with him. We win. We are on the winning side. But we're also left with the physical and emotional consequences of those trials and those difficulties in the meantime. We can have total faith in God, but we are not robots. We are human. We have feelings and emotions, and it's okay to be both happy and sad at times. I'm not a trained counsellor, so I'm not putting things forward as a medical or a psychological sermon. Right, I'm not giving you any advice. If you're going through any of this, take proper advice, right? I'm just touching on the topics to make you aware of them and to give you some assurance that it's okay. So what we're looking at today is that from a biblical perspective, it's okay to have feelings of compassion for others, and it's okay to have emotions when things in our lives are going wrong and that we're not happy about them. In today's clinical world, it's difficult to show emotion without fear of being branded weak or losing professional credibility. And when people hear bad news or are facing difficulties, they feel that they have to put on that brave face and be positive all the time. There's even a movement, I think it's based in America, the positive thinking movement. Have you heard about that? When people say, just be positive, just think positive, and all these problems will just go away. You're not going to have these problems if you're positive. Just be positive. Well, being positive might help you get through the problem, but to say that all you have to do is be positive and nothing bad is going to happen to you is just, nonsense. Being positive doesn't prevent bad things, but it does help you to get through. The Bible tells us a different story when it comes to showing emotions. And as a church, we believe that Jesus is the revelation of God. So if you want to learn about the heart of God, you study Jesus and the Word of God and see what he did and what he inspired. So let's have a look then at Jesus, and this is not comprehensive, I'm sure there's loads of other things that will come to your mind we can talk about later. But Jesus displayed a range of emotions when he was here on earth, and gives us an insight into the character of God. Some see God as a detached and angry God, but Jesus revealed a loving and caring side, a loving and caring God, full of compassion for others, yet uncompromising in his approach to sin. As for his followers, well, they were a bit of a wild bunch, to be honest. But yet, we can also learn from them and the way that they acted. And they're the ones who actually went out and spread the word of Jesus. We can see that they had outbursts as well, but that didn't get in the way of God's purpose for them. So for the first example, let's have a look at John 11, verse 35. Okay? So is it good to have emotion? I think this is the shortest verse in the Bible. It just says, Jesus wept. Does this accord with our put on a brave face philosophy? No. Jesus had emotions. He wept. This is in the context of the death of Lazarus. If you recall, his sisters, Mary and Martha, had called him to heal Lazarus. If you could go back to verse 3. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. So they'd called out for healing. But Jesus had delayed 2 days, and Lazarus had died before Jesus got there. So there was several days actually between them calling, the message getting through, and him arriving. When he arrived, they were in mourning. It says in verse 35 that Jesus wept. And twice it says that his spirit groaned, and that's verse 33 and 38. His spirit groaned. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Well, moved in spirit. Does that show a detached, angry God? No, that shows someone who cared. Someone who was deeply moved, and having deep emotional pain when he encountered the sadness and pain of the family. I don't know about you, but when you think of people passing away, you always have that comfort, that knowledge that they've stepped into eternity or they've moved on to a better place, they've made it from this life. But I don't know about you, when you look in the eyes of the people who are grieving, that's when it hits you, and that's when you feel their pain. So theologically or psychologically or mentally, you know that person's in a better place. When you see the people around, that's when you really feel that pain. And it says here his spirit was troubled. It says in other translations that his spirit groaned. What Jesus was displaying here was love and showing emotional emotion. He delayed his journey, and by the time he got there, after 4 days, it says in John 11, verse 39, and I'm going to read the King James Version. It says, he stinketh, for he had been dead 4 days. He stinketh, he stank. Right, this Lazarus was dead, he was properly gone. He even spoke about it being to glorify God. So there was a bigger picture playing out here. So although he was, as an example, he raised Lazarus, and there was the bigger picture, the bigger example. When he met the family, he didn't say, oh, it's okay, you'll be all right, I'll sort him out. No, he wept with them. Jesus shows that it's okay to display emotion. And this flies in the face of the old adage that big boys don't cry. So let's look at grief. All the textbooks and all the theories say that there are 5 stages of grief that people go through. Whether it's grief of a loved one, or whether it's loss of another kind. However, grief is not a linear process. You can't just tick the boxes and say, oh, I've been through this, I've been through that, oh, I've only 2 stages to go now. It doesn't work like that. It's a messy process inside people, and it sort of swings back and forth, and it's up and down, and it's all over the place. But in the people who've studied grief say that there are 5 stages. There's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then acceptance. You start off not believing it to be true. It doesn't feel real. Then you get angry. How could this have happened? Then you look around and say, is there anybody to blame? If so, who? And then you rationalise and ask yourself if there's anything you could do to help, or if anything else could have been done to help that situation. That leads to depression. Well, or there's also depression, there's very much sadness involved. And then eventually, after a long time, you accept what has happened. And it takes, sometimes it takes years to actually work through that grief process to actually feel any form of normality at the end. I don't think you ever actually fully, you know, that's something which never actually happens in terms of fully getting over somebody's death. You still love that person. You still miss that person. And as I said, there's 5 stages, but it's all a big jumble of emotions, and, you know, the anger comes and goes, the depression comes and goes. You get little glimpses where you feel a little bit normal, and then you swing back into the sadness and the grief. And, you know, that's something which is a natural process. And Jesus walked into the middle of these emotions. What did he do? He simply wept. He was there with them. He felt their pain. He later resurrected Lazarus, as we know. And that was a witness to those who were there. I just imagine, guess what? All those emotions swung around to joy and happiness. They had their Lazarus back. So you can see in that one passage a whole load of different emotions all there. And it's okay to grieve. It's okay to be sad. It's also okay to be happy and rejoice. Okay, let's move on in the story. Verse 53 to 54. It's John 11. This says that the Jews saw this and they plotted to kill Jesus. So he withdrew to a location close to the wilderness with his disciples. Verse 33 says, so from that day on, they plotted to take his life. Therefore, Jesus no longer moved about publicly among the people of Judea. Instead, he withdrew to a region near the wilderness, to a village called Ephraim, where he stayed with his disciples. Okay, then let's have a look. This is showing another emotion. Jesus knew that he would be killed eventually, and he was prepared for that. But in John 11, the time was not right for that to take place. If the Jews had killed him at that stage, the plan would be incomplete, for his destiny was to fulfill the law as the Passover lamb and forgive once for all. So what did they do? Right? Jesus could have brought angels down and protected them. But what happened? They legged it to the wilderness. They ran away. They withdrew themselves from the public realm in Judea and went to the edge of the wilderness. Let's have a look at another emotion then, fear. May I suggest from John 11 that they were fearful for their lives, so they withdrew to the wilderness to escape attention. There are two natural reactions to fear. Do you know what they are? Fight or flight. People either fight back or run away. For example, when you see incidents of crime on telly, either a bystander will wade in to the rescue and be called a hero. They may or may not end up getting hurt in the process. Or people will leg it. People will run away and escape. See these CCTV or terrorist attacks. You see some people diving onto people trying to be, and they're classed as heroes, but most people will run away. That natural instinct, for want of a better word, is to remove yourself from that situation. The events around Jesus' arrest show their fear, but also show the two reactions both demonstrated. So this is quite funny, because this is one passage that actually shows both of the reactions to fear. Let's have a look at Matthew 26. Firstly, fight, right? So, do you remember the story when Judas comes along and he sort of kisses Jesus, identifies who he is? Matthew 26, verse 49 says, going at once to Jesus, Judas said, greetings, Rabbi, and kissed him. Jesus replied, do what you came for, friend. Then the men stepped forward and seized Jesus and arrested him. With that, one of Jesus' companions reached for their sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Right? So that's one reaction. You fight, you get the sword out. Just imagine, you know, just sword everywhere, cuts the bloke's ear off. Right? Go down to the second half of verse 56. It says, then all the disciples deserted him and fled. So then you have the second half of the fear reflex. When you think about it, the Garden of Gethsemane, you know, they were all there together. Judas comes along, and he gets arrested. First reaction, fight. Jesus says, look, put down your sword. He says to them, look, don't fight this, you know, because he knew this was the fulfillment of why he was there. Then they all ran away in fear. Just imagine, they must have thought, oh, hang on, he's just been arrested here. We've got to get out of here, otherwise, by association, we're going to be arrested too. And what do? They run away. Even Peter, the brave but impetuous disciple that, you know, remember? The one who was brave enough to jump out of the boat. The one who said that he, you know, would be with him always. Even Peter denied Jesus 3 times when people in the crowd had recognized him as one of his followers. Let's drop down to Matthew 26, verses 69 to 75. Now Peter, sitting out in the courtyard. Sorry, now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. You were with Jesus of Galilee, she said. But he denied it before them all. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. So even Peter, what's he do? He lies. What do you think he's thinking? Oh, hang on. Not happy about this. He was fearful for what might have happened had he admitted. Verse 71. Then he went to the gateway, where another servant girl saw him and said to the people. Notice they said to the people, so there should have been soldiers and priests and goodness knows who else. This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth. He denied it again with an oath. I do not know the man. After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away. And he began to call down curses and he swore to them, I don't know the man. Immediately a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. And look at this. What does he do? He went outside and wept bitterly. What do we see here? We see fear. Then we see, see him lying, trying to cover himself. But then when he realized that prophecy had just happened and he had denied, disowned Jesus, he wept bitterly. Brave Peter was scared and disappointed in himself with the way he had buckled under pressure and let Jesus down. We see later in the accounts of the post-crucifixion events that they were in the upper room. The door was locked when Jesus appeared to them. Again, they were fearful for their lives, as they had just seen their leader killed. Grown men and women locked away in a room in case they'd got killed. But what does Jesus do? In the middle of their fear, he appeared to them. And do you remember what he said? Peace. He gave them that assurance that they would be okay. Let's go back to Jesus. Despite the fact that it was all preordained, when Jesus eventually faced up to the reality of his destiny in the Garden of Gethsemane, he displayed extreme stress emotions to the extent that he sweat blood. Let's look at Luke 22, verses 39 to 44. Luke 22, verses 39 to 44. Jesus went out, as usual, to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, pray that you will not fall into temptation. He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down and prayed, Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done. An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. Is it okay to be emotional? Jesus was emotional. He displayed that incredible stress that was upon him. Sweating blood is a physical condition which has been known to take place during extreme trauma and stress. Where the capillaries, is that the right word? In the skin burst and blood mixes in with the sweat. Again, it showed the human side to Jesus was very much evident. and he was in an extremely emotional state. Jesus shows that it's okay to be scared and anxious. It's a natural and human emotion. What I'm trying to show today is bravado. Forget bravado. Jesus himself showed emotion. John 12, verse 27 shows that despite his stressful and emotional state, he could see the bigger picture. John 12, 27 says, "Now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save this hour, save me from this hour." No, it was for this hour. For this very reason, I came to this hour. Jesus could see the bigger picture. He knew his destiny. He knew what was going to happen. You know? But what did he do? Did he say, "Well, it's okay, boys, I'll be alive again in 3 days"? No. He went through real emotions. His love was greater than his fear. But it's easy for us to lose sight of the bigger picture when we're going through it. And that's okay. Our imperfection does not reduce God's love for us. When we're going through difficulties and we think that all is lost, that's human. That's our reaction, right? Just somebody saying, okay, there's a bigger picture out there, doesn't help you at that time of need. And if we come across people who are in that situation, quite often all they want to do is talk. They want to just sort of share that problem with you. If we're going through that situation ourselves, talk to others. What's the saying? Problem shared is a problem halved. Okay, you're still going through it, but at least that gives you that outlet to be able to talk to other people. And as a church and as a congregation, if somebody is going through that sort of difficulty, I'd like to think that they could pick up the phone and have a chat, even if it's not about the problem, if it's about something else. At least that people can know that there are people that care, people that will talk. Going back to what Geordie Clatch was saying, sometimes if you're in that situation, everything's whirling around you, it's difficult to get to that eye of the storm and actually pray to God. What did I say last time I was here after the Ascension? What's Jesus doing? He's in heaven, interceding for us. God knows what we're going through. We can have that assurance that his love is much greater than our problems. Is it okay to feel down in the meantime? Yes, it is. That's human. You know, very often we don't see the wood for the trees. But we can have that assurance deep down, just to cling on to the fact that Jesus is there interceding for us. Does God expect us to be perfect? Does God expect us to have no emotions? As a former manager of mine used to say, only one person has ever been perfect, and I'm not him. No. Jesus does not expect us to be perfect because he is our perfection. What about other emotions? Jealousy is a very destructive one. When you see what's going on around us, people profiteering from crime and corruption, when we don't have what we want, but everybody else does, quite often through dubious means. One of the Ten Commandments says, do not covet. I like chapters like Psalm 73, when, I've done sermons on it before, when Asaph was there and he was saying, oh yes, God, you know, woe is me, all these people are doing X, Y, and Z. And what does God say? Look, they're on a slippery slope. Don't worry about them. Psalm 73, he was saying, it's not fair. But God reveals that the people were heading for destruction. Jesus himself said that he was going away and that his followers could expect a hard time. Right? So Jesus doesn't promise us the health and wealth and all the rest of it and all the happy shininess. Right, let's have a look at John 16, verses 20 to 22. And again, this is the reality that's difficult to see when you're going through it. John 16, verse 20. Very truly I tell you, you will weep and mourn while the world rejoices. You will grieve, but your grief will turn to joy. A woman giving birth to a child has pain because her time has come. But when her baby is born, she forgets the anguish because of that joy. That child is born into the world. So with you, now is your time of grief, but I will see you again, and you will rejoice, and no one will take away your joy. As I said, that's the reality of it, which is very difficult to see. So when we see people around us and we're jealous, that's destructive. But think about the bigger picture. The riches of this world are temporary, but the joy to come, no one can take away. Okay, what about anger? John 2, verse 14 and Matthew 21, verse 12 shows that Jesus went into the temple and turned the tables over. Let's look at John 2. Let's start in verse 13. It says, when it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle, sheep and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip of cords and drove all from the temple courts, both sheep and cattle, and he scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. To those who sold doves, he said, get these out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a market. Right. You can imagine the little anger inside his head going, what are they doing in my holy place? And he drove them out. Jesus saw what was happening, and he was angry. Jesus did not compromise with what he saw was wrong. Anger, in and of itself, can be a positive thing, as it shows passion and compassion, which can lead to positive action. On the other hand, if anger leads to violence and destruction, it becomes a problem, as that is not showing the love of God and care for people. So is it okay to be angry when we see poverty in this world? Is it okay to be angry when you see people being killed in terrorist attacks? Anger shows love in that context. Okay? Is it right to go and punch somebody if they annoy you? No, that's not showing love. But anger in and of itself is not wrong. Jesus showed that you can show compassion even in the face of sin. And I like the phrase coined by Steve McVeigh, that you don't condone sin, but you don't condemn the sinner. And the example that comes to mind is the woman caught in adultery. He was uncompromising, but he showed compassion. Okay, so we're going from anger to compassion. John 8, verses 3 to 11. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in the woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law of Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now what do you say? They were using the question as a trap in order to have the basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away, one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left, with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and said, and asked her, Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? No one, sir, she said. Neither do I condemn you, declared Jesus. Now go and leave your life of sin. What do you think she was feeling? Right? Jesus was inviting everybody else to pick up a stone and stone her. Was he light on the sin? No. He was saying, look, that's the law. Stone her then. But whoever's without sin, you cast the first stone. He didn't go away from, he didn't condone the sin in any way, shape or form. But he showed compassion on her by saying, look, I do not condemn you. Did he say, go away and carry on sinning? No. He said, go and leave your life of sin. His grace and love was greater than her sin. But he demanded change as a result, not the other way around. So again, that's another passage where you see emotions coming and being being shown. Depression is another one that has an emotional element. But clinical depression is a chemical imbalance, so it's a medical condition as well. I don't suffer from it, so I can't talk from experience. I'm not a doctor, so don't listen to me in a medical sense, right? That's my health and safety caveat. If some people suffer from it, they should seek advice. But from what I do know about it, is that depression changes perception. And what you see sometimes is not the reality of what's actually going on. Just with, as with grief and sadness, just telling somebody with depression, have faith, isn't going to help, isn't going to cut through that depression. What helps is to listen to that person, let them talk or shout or vent their emotions, even if we see things differently, and even if that person's perception is not what is happening in reality. That is the reality to that person. Just saying to them, have faith, and telling them that they're wrong, is that going to help? No. There's no shame if somebody suffers from depression. Like I said, it's a condition. I think some people mix it up with sadness and mix it up with stress, but there's actually a condition there. And we need to love and care for people just as Jesus did, with compassion. Despite the fact that in a lot of cases people with depression can't see the love of God, it's very difficult to see through the fog, through that mist, through that perception that depression has put in front of their eyes. It's very difficult, but Jesus loves that person. Depression is a topic which is, as I said, beyond my expertise, so I don't want to give you any sort of medical advice on it, okay? But what I will say is that it is a massive problem. I don't have any statistics, but you know, it is a massive problem with people around us. Depression can be very difficult. And so is loneliness. Again, sort of linked. It's another emotion that we feel. Jesus talked about people visiting him in Matthew 25. I was in prison, he visited me. Loneliness is something which is a real problem to a lot of people. Don't forget those people who are on their own. And if you are on your own and you feel lonely, don't feel guilty about feeling lonely. And don't let that loneliness fog your judgment. It's easy not to want to go out if you're lonely and depressed. It's easy to sort of cut yourself away, to pull away from people. But we as a church are here. And it's a good way to have contact with friends and with family. We are one big family, and when people are struggling, there's no shame in struggling. There's no shame in sharing that you're struggling. You know, as a church, we should be here to listen and to give support. Before I conclude, a general point is that if somebody is feeling negative emotions, they quite often just want to talk. And that's something which we've seen out on the street down in Llanelli. Some people, they didn't want any soup or coffee or anything, they just wanted to talk. Yeah, people who've gone through different situations, very, very difficult situations, appreciated there being somebody there they can talk to. You know, I think, as Deborah keeps saying, it's like having a soup kitchen out there. The soup is secondary. What, and I'm sure that he goes to the one in Newport to help out. You'd probably say the same, is that it's that opportunity, it's that contact point. And that's what matters. It's somewhere that people can come, talk, and come into the presence of God to actually have that contact with other people. There's one bloke who was recovering from various situations, and he just wanted to talk to other Christians. Didn't want to go to church. I wasn't talking to him. There's a couple who were helping out down there. Spoke to him for a good 45-minute hour. He just wanted to talk. When people are feeling sad or depressed or lonely or recovering from different situations, they want to talk. Sometimes they don't want to talk. They just want the presence of people and they don't want to open up. But certainly from our experience, we've only done it 3 weeks, but certainly our experience is that when people are there, they will open up and they'll tell you their story. And that's important for us to be there for people. So, today, I've just scratched the surface of a whole range of human emotions. I'm sure there's lots of others. And what the message I want you to take away today is that it's okay. You know, life isn't one great big happy, you know, experience. People go through all sorts of things. We all go through things. Ecclesiastes 3 shows that there's a time for everything. Life is a mixed bag of emotions and experiences. What did Forrest Gump say? Life's a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. You never know what you're going to get next as well. Ecclesiastes 3, verses 1 to 8. There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them in. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. What I'm saying today is that we are not robots. And quite often when we do feel down, we feel guilty for feeling down. And that then makes you feel down again. It's a negative spiral. But what I'm saying is that it's okay to show emotion. We've seen a few examples from Jesus himself. Even anger and hatred can be used positively. And we see, when we see injustice and suffering, it can stir love and action. Emotions are not the problem. It's what flows from them. Is that what can be good and bad? Don't feel guilty for feeling sad or lonely. Talk about it. I've been talking about emotions. And like I said, it's a massive subject, so hopefully you found it useful. So, do you want to put that off? So, hopefully you found that useful to be able to sort of...